Welcome to another edition of the Better Health Radio Show. And this evening, you've got Dr. Keo Fordson Hill. She'll be here to take you through the evening. I'm Greg Stinson with you. And without further ado, let's get right on over to the good doctor and say good evening. And how have you been?
Good evening. Good evening, Gregson. I've been good. How are you?
I'm not too bad at all. Good to see you.
Good. So, Gregson and I were just joking with each other because I don't have a guest with me this evening. It's just me and Gregson, listeners. That's a series of unfortunate events, but we are pretty confident that it's still going to be a very good show. Right?
Right, right. I guess I'm your guest.
You are. Exactly. So don't worry. I won't drill you with too many questions.
That's very kind of you.
Too hard. Right? So let me say an official good evening to our listeners and to Gregston and welcome you all here on the Better Health Radio Show, which is a show that is aimed at raising public awareness of common health issues that affect us all. And as Gregson said, I am Dr. Keo Fordson Hill, and it is my pleasure to be your host this evening. I am one of three hosts. The other hosts are Dr. Adana Granison and Dr. Kia Lewis, but they're not here today. We take turns. Sometimes you got trifecta and you got all of us. We are very much looking forward to an engaging and interactive session this evening, especially this evening. And I take this opportunity to remind you that you can contact us with your questions and comments either by calling us at 434-1790. So that's 434-1790, just like station. Or you can send your WhatsApp messages to 266-4862. So those of you who prefer to WhatsApp, you can WhatsApp us at 266-4862. Now, Gregson, besides it being Sunday, do you know what today is?
Palm Sunday? Or besides that?
Yeah. Well, that's true, yes. But besides that, I don't want anybody to come for me. What you mean besides that?
You care to give me a hint?
I can. Okay, so today, I'm just going to tell you. Today, April 2nd, internationally is celebrated as World Autism Awareness Day.
I would have never guessed that one. Never.
That is okay, and that is why I am here today. So, some people would say, well, you know, I hear the word autism, and there are a lot of misconceptions about autism, which I'm going to try to dispel today. And our listeners can feel free to call in. I would especially love to hear from any of you who have family members who were ever diagnosed as being on the autism spectrum. That would be really good. But of course, we want to hear from anybody who has questions about autism or any experiences, teachers, anybody listening who could give some insight or their experiences, particularly those who actually have relatives with autism. And I say relatives and not children with autism because autism affects both children and adults. So that's one myth already dispelled, because there are a lot of people who probably think that it's just something, a disorder that children have, but it's actually children and adults because these children grow up. And it's not something that is curable, myth number two. So it's not something that goes away, right? But I'm going to get into the whole thing about saying autism spectrum disorder versus how the nomenclature we used to use before, which was, oh, autistic or autism. But now we realize there's a range. So that's why we say autism spectrum disorder, right? So I'm going to give a definition. Before I give the definition, let me remind you of the numbers so that you can call in. You can call in at 434-1790, or you can WhatsApp us at 266-4862. All right, so let's talk about what autism is. And for those of you who are just joining us, we are talking about autism because it is World Autism Awareness Day. right? And the whole thing is that there's a lot of things that are not understood, are not known about it, and educating the public is what helps to make life a little easier for those who happen to be on the spectrum, right? So autism spectrum disorder is a developmental disability, right? So it starts in childhood for the most part, and we're going to get into the developmental parts. It affects how a person interacts with the world, right? And it can cause difficulties with socializing, communicating, and behavior. So the term spectrum, as we can imagine, we know this from light, right? It refers to the wide range of symptoms and behaviors that a person with in the autism spectrum might actually have. So children in the past, we used to actually diagnose children with particular types of autism. So somebody, like especially like some movies and stuff, have made the term like Asperger's well known, right? Where you look at these exceptionally gifted children who may be a little socially awkward, right? But we don't use that anymore, right? So it's classified according to whether it could. What we would give classifications to would be if there is a learning or intellectual disability or a language impairment, right? And the level of severity and the degree of support that the child would actually need, right? So remember that the two core issues in autism are that there are problems with social communication, and then there's restricted or repetitive behaviors, right? And these would indicate the amount of support that the person with autism would need. And then there's this other term that has been coming up a lot recently, which is neurodiversity or neurodivergent. You would hear, saying a neurotypical child, meaning a child who is otherwise normally developed, right, without issues. And then you would hear somebody say, but this child is neurodivergent. And that, in this case, right, is used to describe the fact that persons' brains work differently, right? And so neurodiversity would include persons who are on the autism spectrum, as well as many other conditions, such as even attention deficit, hyperactivity disorder, or learning difficulties would fall under neurodivergence, right? So the question you might ask is, well, how does autism spectrum disorder develop? And that is a tricky question, because the truth is that there's no general consensus as to a cause or how it happens. I am confident with the way that technology and research and medicine is going, that years after I am gone or when I am retired, we might know a lot more about how autism actually develops and what causes it. But what I can see is that there's a general consensus that whatever it is or whatever things are contributing to it, right, affect brain development. And this impairs the development of social and communication skills. So this in turn then would lead to the typical symptoms that we see from persons who are on the autism spectrum. And I'll get into symptoms a little later on, right? So as I said, in most children, we don't know what causes autism, but there are children who would be at increased risk, and there may be things that we can sorry about that, excuse me, listeners. And there are things that we can I probably confidently attribute or say have contributed to the development of autism, and that would be like exposures to toxins before or even after birth, complications during delivery, because if a delivery becomes complicated, oxygen gets cut off from the baby for any reason, then you can get potentially have damage to the brain, and sometimes it's not as obvious as a physical disability or the child actually losing consciousness, but just those short periods of losing oxygen can actually cause damage to the brain that we're not able to see, right? But then manifest in different ways.
So
Infection.
is it fair to say then that this is a situation that is realized pre-birth?
Not really.
It isn't,
after,
right?
Yeah. So like you can't, yeah, you can't, unfortunately, you can't predict if a child is going to develop autism. And I'll get to that shortly. But then there's some other things, like if you've had a child with autism, then the likelihood that another one of your children after develops autism is higher than the average person, right? So if you have a family history, and then as I was saying about the environmental toxins and that sort of thing, if the mother is exposed, can possibly contribute. Now, the one thing that I can dispel right now, which is very unfortunate and has been pushed for a long time, for years, is that vaccines do not cause autism. There was a person, because I don't want to even qualify their qualifications, alleged qualifications, who was going around and pushing this alleged research paper that said that a certain type of vaccine was contributing to children developing autism. And when people actually looked at, like, when you critically analyze that research paper, then you start to realize that, one, it was, the sample size was probably like 12 children. And two, nothing about the research was sound. And it really could not say definitively, okay, this is what caused that. So I just want to dispel parents' fears from no. That vaccines are not responsible for your child developing autism.
Well, right? I beg your pardon. The reason why I asked that first question there was because you said that it could be a simple situation of oxygen, the baby before being born, being deprived of oxygen. Mm-hmm. But you're saying then that it's not necessarily a pre-birth condition, it's developed after birth, this autism.
Could be.
All right. No.
That's a thing. We don't know a lot about it. That's a thing.
All right. I've got a caller here waiting, if you don't mind. Do you wish me to engage? Good evening.
Personally, go ahead.
Yes, good evening. Hi. Great evening. Sorry. Great evening.
Go right ahead. She can hear you.
Oh. Yeah. I was just wondering, I have a couple of questions about autism.
Sure.
Thanks for taking my call as well, and appreciate this wonderful discussion this evening in an area that I don't know a lot about myself, so I need now to go and do some research. So thank you so very much for this Better Health program. Dr. Ford Sinhill, I'm wondering, in terms of external factors, because you know autism is a very intrinsic thing. It deals with the brain. Yeah. It deals with the brain developing. At what stage would an autistic person be easiest apt at coming out of it, at being able to be not necessarily cured, because you say you don't know, you don't have a cure. Sorry, you don't have a cure, but at what age, developmental age of an autistic person themselves, what would be the easiest time of them actually being able to come out of it, having had the support from a good person like yourself? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for that. So the thing about it is that because it's a spectrum, right? You have individuals who require a lot of support, and then you have individuals that actually don't. And with the right support, which we'll get into, like the types of support that some of these children need.
Yes, thank you so very much indeed.
Some of these symptoms do get better as they get older, as they learn to manage and to cope with their environment a little better. And then there are things that would not get better in some instances. But it's hard to just say, well, at a particular age, because children with autism are so different in terms of each child. that is on the autism spectrum is very, very different. You will have children who most of their, even their teachers that spend a lot of time with them on a daily basis, unless they are very vigilant and very, very well educated
on the
topic, might not even recognize that the child is on the autism spectrum. And then there's some children where it is a lot more obvious because it may be a child who is nonverbal or a child who is very sensitive to noises and has some of the repetitive behaviors that are obvious when you actually see them because they move differently, they do things a little different. So that makes that question a little difficult to answer.
Sorry for that. Yes, it was an interesting way that you put it to answer. I thank you so very much. My final question, Dr. Ford St. Hill, I was wondering in terms, because they're not good at actually talking or, you know, the conversation in terms of what would be, would they have more energy as a result? Like because they don't speak very well, they don't talk, they don't engage in all of the technologies that obviously we didn't have, but they have. They have tablets, they have phones, they have all these things in which to talk, all these media in which to talk. So I'm wondering, do they carry more energy as a matter of fact, or when they actually do get talking by the same support, and thank you very much, can they be even better or regular at speaking like how other people who don't have autism are? That's my final question. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you,
no
sir.
Problem. Thank you so much, caller. That was, I thank you for your participation. So again, I want to stress that autism is on a spectrum, and that's why it's autism spectrum disorder. And I want all of us to, if we remember nothing else this evening, remember that. So there are children who are nonverbal, right? And then there are children who may have a speech delay as a result of being on the autism spectrum. So with speech therapy and occupational therapy and that sort of thing, with different therapies, and the support of their families and their teachers, some of these children can actually improve where their speech is concerned. And how fast that happens, again, is just dependent on the child and the degree of disability that they have. But there's no predicting it. There's no... And to answer your question about the increased energy, I can't say that that is a thing, right? And we have another caller,
yes,
right, Gregson?
Go right ahead, ma'am.
Hi, good evening. I have a teenager daughter who is autistic / Tourette syndrome. But sometimes she have her tics, like she have her episodes, is very hard and challenging. But I was also told that she might have a tip of ADHD. Some days could be very normal, very good. Now, the times is like she just has her tics and it's like way off. Like, doctors say, like, she will go off, like, she's a mad person. You can't control it, you can't stop it, you gotta let you get it out. But I wanted to know if there's a autism organization here in Barbados.
Yes. And if you don't mind, would we be able to keep you on the phone for a little while longer so I can ask you some questions?
Am I on the cell phone?
Oh, okay. All right. So yes. So just let me answer your question quickly. So yes, there's an Autism Association in Barbados, and they are on Instagram as well as Facebook. The Autism Awareness Association, I believe the current page has 2022.
Because I saw two. My other issue, I can't go my site, so I will have to have the telephone number if possible.
I did not see a telephone number there when I was looking on the pages. But if somebody can, I will try to find that out for you, and I will pass on the information to Gregson. But if not, if somebody else who's listening can call in so that you can provide a number for this mother who would like some support and like to belong to the association, that would be really good. I was trying to get somebody from the association, but I wasn't successful in doing that today. But we're going to try to get that information for you, okay?
Okay, thank you so very much. Have a good evening.
You too. Thank you for calling.
All right, just remember when you do call, just turn your radio in your background down for us a bit so we don't have you coming back at us more than once. I think we've got another call, Doc, so let's see if we can access this call here very quickly. A very good evening to you.
Yes, Mr. Esteem.
Yes, sir.
Good evening.
I'm not too bad, Mr. Hope. Go ahead, please.
Am I?
Yes, please. You
yes,
are.
Mr. Hope.
The
good
doctor
ahead.
Can hear you.
Wow, how are you this evening?
I'm good. How are you, sir?
I'm here listening to you. In my time, when I dealt with referrals of autism from the clinical psychologist, I was a little bit controversial about it.
Okay.
Why? Because at that time, in the specialist area, every little child that make a tantrum or somebody aggravated the situation and made them throw tantrums, they were classified as autistic. So I got a few parents to take who could afford to take the children to England to be tested, and when they came back, they said the test was proven negative. However, in that time, there were so many features for autism. I would like to know if they have been cut down to a few. And there are two things that I don't remember that I can explain properly at this time, but I would just mention them to see if you can help me out with the explanation. In the clinical, in England, they mainly use a clinical aspect at that time towards autism, while in the States, they use a more social and educational aspect, where they will have 10 features in the States for proving an autistic person and identify the ages between one year, 9 months to 2 years, while in England, they use the clinical aspect where they use a something called a form board. It wouldn't come to me now and attach it to school. And, you know, I knew those things perfectly well, and no, they wouldn't come at all. So the clinical aspect of it. But then what I found was here in Barbados, I worked with one autistic person between the age of between 6 and 9 years old, and they exhibited most of the symptoms that they talk about, the banging of the head or the biting of the skin when they can't achieve the goals. And I had to modify that behavior. Not only that, the person was speechless, and believe it or not, I never said it before publicly, but I got that person to talk using a primary reinforcer food, mainly a drink, and it was Barkstone ginger beer.
Nice.
And the mother was shocked, because that time I believe in using primary reinforcers with those children, and I found out what the person liked. And every time I do the class, I use a Barkstone ginger beer, and by the end of the sessions, the person could speak.
Nice.
And I reported it, because I always wrote an analysis report and give it to the parent, and I don't know where they went after that. But that was the only success I had for the autistic persons I worked with. And now I can say it, because I think Victor Ford has passed on.
I'm not sure, but funny enough, somebody asked me about him just yesterday. I did a talk at church yesterday,
somebody
actually asked me about him.
I don't believe it unless I get proof, but the student was recommended to me by a psychologist, Victor Ford, because I used to do a lot of assessment referrals for him from the Child Guidance Clinic, and I can't help the presence of Dr. Harvey, who developed it, because they also do assessment. But one of the things I want to know is that you have a wide spectrum of speech delayed problems in Barbados, because the Trisomy 21 that was spoken about, they have speech delayed problems, sometimes no speech at all.
Yes.
Then there are other persons with speech deficits, the autistic person. I mean, it's wide, but what I found was that people were misconceptualizing diagnosis of autistic and dyslexic persons. And that's why it became very controversial at that time. Because it is very uncomforting to misdiagnose a human being and then put them in a class for behavior mod that is not really suited to that person. So basically, I wanted to know if you could, at least I think they're still having the sessions where they're diagnosed from early birth up to 2 years old in the state.
Yes.
I think that one is still in.
Yes, so usually the screening for autism, at least at the from the pediatrician's point of view, they usually screen between 18 months and 2 years old. So 18 and 24 months is when they would normally do routine screening for all of their patients. And that is both a combination of clinical judgment and clinical examination, as well as screening tools, so like screening questionnaires that they would give the parents, because obviously the parent is who's going to have to answer a question about, does your child say 10 words? Does your child, you know, that sort of thing. So it's a combination of these screening questionnaires as well as a clinical examination.
Is the one with not being able to be potty trained at a certain age that's still included?
I would have to pull it up, but I'm not certain about every question that's on it. But I do know, of course, that it's normal for some children to not be potty trained at the age of 2. So I would have to pull it up. I will admit that I am not.
Don't worry about that. This is the one that is coming that was very controversial for me. Out of the 10 states that Leah Kana, who developed those 10 positions for autism, the one that I objected was, he said that if you are like in Barbados, you know where children were taught to be seen and not heard, so they would always be passive and quiet.
Right.
He said that was one of the issues, that was one of the rules for autism, and I outruled that because I said if that's the case, all the people in Barbados would be diagnosed as being autistic because they're very shy and withdrawn. So that was controversial. That was one of the 10 situations with Leo Connor. He was the one who developed the 10 identifiable means for autism. And I resented that because in Barbados in particular, people are very shy and withdrawn, even up to now.
All right, Mr. Hope, we gave you a long run there, and I've had one or two or three callers drop out since then. So I want to thank you, Mr. Hope, and try to engage just one that's calling now, all right?
Okay, thank you.
Goody. Take care, Mr. Hope. All right, let's see if we can access this one here. Very good evening to you.
Yes.
Good evening. Hello?
Oh, dear.
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yes, go right ahead, please.
Yes, what I'm wondering, if the use of birth control pills have a sequelae, can this be the sequelae to the use of birth control pills?
I'm sorry, I missed most of that. I only heard birth control pills.
Yeah, could you say again, please?
Can autism be a sequelae to the use of birth control pills?
That has never been proven. That's actually the first time I've even heard that postulation. So there's no research to support that. No.
There's none.
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you kindly, sir. I've got a query here for you, Dr. Ford. Let me see if I can turn. It says, good evening, Dr. Ford. I once read a story about a gentleman who was autistic to the point that he could not speak or complete a single task. But one day, the father heard him playing a complex musical piece on the piano. He was referred to as an autistic savant. Please explain.
Yeah, so that is an old term, but yes. So it would have been savant or Asperger's, which we previously referred to children or persons who had autism and had an exceptional gift, I guess, that was surprising because, you know, the person either was nonverbal or on a regular day, there are a lot of simple tasks that they would not be able to complete, but are able to play a Mozart piece, right? So they do have some children and adults who are gifted, who would be able to read some very complex words and books that are far beyond their years. But sometimes when you actually delve into it, they're not really understanding what it is that they're reading. But there are some that do, who will be able to rattle off statistics about cricket that you and I cannot remember and that are far beyond their time, and then they may be able to tell you down to the genetic makeup of each particular dinosaur, but you know, will struggle with social interaction, with persons. So again, everything is on a spectrum, but yes, that is a term that was used in the past. We have any more calls?
No, please. You can go ahead, please.
Okay. So let's get into some of the symptoms, right? And as I was, as I had explained to Mr. Holt, most of the screening for autism, at least if you're going to do early screening, it's done between the ages of 18 months and 24 months. And that is because of the level of development that usually happens in that time. If you think about it, from walking to saying words to being able to, you know, developing some gross and fine motor skills are usually developing pretty rapidly during that time, right? So that's one of the reasons that we screen then. But there are parents who will say, or caregivers who will say, that they noticed signs even before that, like when the child was a lot smaller. So their struggles with social interaction with some, they may, and that usually is one of the reasons that caregivers actually seek help for at least screening for autism. So they may have a difficulty with or lack of interaction with family and friends. Social interaction includes nonverbal behaviors, remember, peer relationships, joint attention, which is being able to either, you know, like play with others, or they see a dog. If you think about a typical child, right? They see a dog or they see a cat and they look at you as their dad, and then they look back at the cat, and they may not be able to say anything. They look back at, you know, when they're a little more developed, they'll be able to point, and you say, you know. And this is a typical child, not a child on the spectrum, right? But some children on the spectrum will not even like try to like bring you into the fact that they've found something that drew their attention. So they will see the cat, they're never going to look at you because they're not interested in whether you see the cat or not. And they're not going to point to it because they can't, right? And then developing, and then sometimes they may have very little interest in developing friendships with other children and that, and or adults. And that, we know, playing and developing friendships is a hallmark of childhood. Up to today, I was joking with someone at church because I was saying, my daughter keeps saying, you know, this buddy's her friend and this person is her friend. And when I asked her, well, what's your friend's name? She has no idea. But she, you know, from the time she's able to smile or laugh and play with you, she's considering you her friend. Some children on the spectrum are not able to form friendships as easily. They're not interested in interacting with other children like that.
All right. Let me interrupt you very quickly because I've got a gentleman on the line. Don't want to use up too much of his credit. So good evening, sir.
For sure.
Yes, let me ask you. Yes, good evening, doctor. I want to know, what is the central nervous system? I want to know whether this central nervous system can be more or less impacted on or affected by the taking of marijuana. And I want to know if old age, perhaps let's say in an adult, can produce a child. Oh, not that he can, but he can get a girl pregnant or a woman pregnant who would virtually demonstrate the problems of an autistic child. Because my reason for saying this, I have been teaching for a while in an infant department, and I realized that there were sets of children who would have demonstrated some measure of this problem. Those who were old men's children, they were very slow indeed, and they, most often they couldn't read or write for a very long time, if at all. And then I realized that recently, a child who would have been taking marijuana wouldn't be able to read with the rapidity of more or less the average child. And I became a bit concerned about this. I was giving him some work, and he tapped his head, and he said, the smoke. That is all that he was saying. I said, he can't smell any smoke. I said, what do you mean? And he said, well, I've been smoking marijuana. So I want to know if these things can impact the central nervous system and lead one into believing that, okay, they are autistic or whatever. Just dilate on that for me, please. Thank you. Good night.
Thank you, sir.
Certainly. So the central nervous system is, you know, made out of the brain and the spinal cord. And there's a short way and a long way to answer this question. So in short, we don't have any proof in terms of research and science, that, you know, having children at an older age, particularly with the father being older, impacts whether a child develops autism or not.
But I have heard that before, though, Doc. I must tell you.
Me as well.
And that's why Cheryl is here poking me like, you.
I have heard that before as well. And I will say that sometimes I do see children who have older parents, or at least an elderly or very old parents, advanced age for a parent, for what we would consider normal for a parent. And sometimes they do have intellectual disabilities or other disabilities. And there's a long explanation for that, but I can't say that it necessarily will increase the risk that a child gets autism. But I would say that, you know, in anecdotally, I have seen that, you know, some children of older parents do have intellectual disabilities, right? And there are various reasons for that. And that's a whole topic by itself.
Yeah, so that's what I'm going to ask you to ask Cheryl to leave me alone about this, getting children in your old age. But anyhow, carry on.
And then as for the marijuana, I'm not sure that he was actually asking the marijuana as a result, as it relates to autism. I think he was just asking about that as it relates to learning. And we'll talk about that another day. I'm sorry, sir. But you listen out. We will definitely talk about cannabis on another show. And especially cannabis as it relates to use in young persons, children especially, right? But we will talk about that. Any other callers?
No, please. You can go ahead.
Okay. So we spoke about some of the social interactions. So as I was saying, they may prefer to play alone. They may involve others in their play like an adult, but they're not because they want to play with you, but because they cannot reach something and they will literally grab your hand. You are being used as a tool and not as a playmate, right? And that's some children. Some older children may actually become more interested in talking and socializing with other people, but then they have difficulty with picking up social cues. So they will continue to talk about a topic over and over and over and not realize, you know, not allow somebody else to contribute to the conversation, or not realize that somebody's no longer interested in that conversation.
Well, I'll tell you what, Doc, just to infuse a little bit of lightheartedness, then there are lots of people who suffer from that situation.
That's the truth, right? So what I always say when it comes to a diagnosis is that one symptom does not make a diagnosis, okay, right? Because otherwise, we would
classify a lot of people. Yep, gotcha.
Right? Because it's a combination of things. So then there's also, as I was saying, the nonverbal behaviors are, you know, because all the things I spoke about are about communication, right? So the things outside of communication, some have difficulty using and interpreting nonverbal behaviors such as eye contact, facial expression, gestures, and body posture. So an example that was given is that a child may not be able to understand the facial expressions associated with anger or annoyance, or may not be able to use eye contact or a gesture to indicate that they actually want something. Right. So during infancy, some caregivers might start to realize that the baby doesn't really want to cuddle. And you know that is all a baby likes to do, right? They may avoid eye contact, not open their arms and reach out for somebody to pick them up. So, but this is not every child who's on the autism spectrum, but these are some things, right? And then there's some other behaviors, like these stereotypical behaviors, where like repetitive body movements such as hand or finger flapping or twisting, rocking, swaying. They were talking about the one of the callers was speaking about the banging of the head. Some of them do that. Walking on tiptoe, and I know there are a lot of people who do that, but in combination with other things, that would make us concerned, right? And then some of them have a they need to stick to a routine, need things to be very samey, you know. And if you deviate from that at all, then it becomes a problem and you actually start to see some serious tantrums. So as the caller was saying, he was getting a lot of referrals for people who were referring children just because they were having tantrums. But these, you know, you understand what level of tantrum is normal for different age groups. But in some children on the autism spectrum, their tantrum may not match up with the age, and it may not match up with the severity of the disruption. So for a very small issue, they may blow up, right? And you may say, but they're overreacting. But it's not really overreacting. That's how they know to react, right? And then some have restricted interests. So younger children may be preoccupied with spinning objects or shiny surfaces or the lights or odors and touching things, weather, dates, schedules. So like facts that I was telling you about, numbers and license plates, cartoon characters, dinosaurs, you know, stuff like that. And then some of them have what we would consider not necessarily a typical response to some sensory stuff. So like loud noises, some are not even loud noises, but some noises some children are extremely sensitive to, and they may not even be a noise that you recognize is very loud where you are. So they may be hearing the ice cream van 4 avenues down, and that actually triggers them, right? On the opposite end, you may have then a child who actually does not react to very loud noises. So an explosion, firecrackers mean nothing to them. Well, you and I may actually jump. The child just carries on as if nothing was ever happening, right? And then some of them, you know, refuse to eat certain foods because of the texture, or only want to eat certain foods because of the texture. So it actually goes both ways. And then, as I was saying, as far as diagnosis, if you have any concerns, the first place to start would be your family physician, your pediatrician. I encourage all caregivers, please make sure that children see a pediatrician at least once a year. Please, please, please. All right, we have another call on the line.
Yes, hi, good evening. It's me again.
Hi.
Thank you. Very quickly, Dr. Forrest Hill, I was wondering, based on all the wonderful information that you were saying, I was trying to add up 2 and 2 based on the topic tonight. And I was wondering, since people, we know that relationships help with mental health as well as physical health. A good laugh relates to the blood pressure and so on. You get you get a better mood with hugs and kisses from family. So I was just asking, based on the fact that an autistic person is not able to speak well or speak at all or good with the communicative correspondent relationship between a man and a woman, or a man and a man, or the girl-boy, girl with girl, or boy with boy, or girl with boy, or boy with girl, would they, a little later in life, Dr. Forrest Hill, develop like dementia or Parkinson's or one of these diseases that is in that particular spectrum? Because they're not getting the same type of stimulus, they're not getting the same type of interest in terms of this aspect of us as being social creatures, the social relationships, wouldn't they be more predisposed to get a mental illness? Thank you.
Okay, so I can't say that for sure. But what I would say is that to remember again that this is a spectrum, right, within this disorder. And there are some children who are diagnosed with autism who go on as adults to have healthy relationships, get married. I really wish that I was able to bring on an adult who is functioning well with autism, as well as a parent who may have a child earlier on starting out in this diagnosis and this journey, so that you guys could have. That's why I was really hoping that the caller earlier would have been able to speak to us a little longer. But I can't necessarily see that that would happen, that they would develop one of those cognitive issues as a result of cognitive decline.
Very well. Thank you very much based on the research. Goodbye.
Yes, thank you. All right. So as I was saying, I really would like, I cannot stress how important it is to see a pediatrician at least once a year. I know that's not always in everybody's budget, but this is one thing that I would like us to try to improve on, right? Because the pediatricians usually screen for autism. And then we actually have developmental pediatricians in Barbados. And they are better able, so they're even a little more specialized than your average pediatrician who deals with children. They deal with the development of children. So they are even better at picking it up. And as I was explaining to Mr. Hope earlier, it is a combination of their clinical observation and examination, as well as the information that they get from the caregivers. So you can go to your family physician, you can go to the pediatrician, and if you go to your family physician and they're not sure, they can refer you to a pediatrician. There are developmental pediatricians at the AC, the Albert Cecil Graham Development Center. That's always a mouthful for me, of what used to be known as the Children's Development Center. For everybody who didn't know, it was renamed the Albert Cecil Graham Development Center. And of course, that is free of cost. And you can go there and be seen by the developmental pediatricians if you have concerns. Now, I like to manage expectations. And as you can imagine, with not having a lot of services within the public system, there is quite a bit of a lengthy waiting list as well. And you can also, psychologists are actually very good at this as well, because they can evaluate the child's communicate, their language development, learning development, their social development, that sort of thing. And then if we look at the persons who, if in the ideal world, who will be involved in this child's care would be the developmental pediatrician or pediatrician, psychologist, speech and language therapists, as I said before, because there are some children who have a speech delay, there's some who have difficulties with speech, and then there's some who are nonverbal, and then there's some who have no issues where speech is concerned, but the speech therapy still helps because they don't have any issue with actually saying words, but it helps in terms of communication, because communication is a lot more than just speaking, right? And we also would have to test the child's cognitive skills. And your cognitive skills are those that deal with memory, learning, and decision making, right? The psychiatrist becomes involved sometimes. And sometimes we make the diagnosis. Sometimes we are asked to assist as far as therapies to help control some of the behaviors, because there is association. Like, children on the autism spectrum, because you're autistic doesn't mean you don't have other diagnoses. So a child with autism may also have attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. So they would need treatment for that. They may have an intellectual disability. Now, people are probably saying, she's saying that all the time, but I don't know what that is. No, intellectual disability. In the past, you would have heard people refer to that as mental retardation, but we do not use that term anymore. There's intellectual disability, and there are degrees of intellectual disability from mild to very severe, right? And then I feel like I lost my train of thought there. I'm terribly sorry. But so the treatment is supportive. What is very important as parents and caregivers, right, is that you learn about the condition. Because there are parents who do not understand what it is. And it's not something that is very widely spoken about, but we're trying to change that. So it's very important as a caregiver that you educate yourself. So as a parent, as the Sunday school teacher, as the auntie, as at the nursery, as the teacher, you know, if you don't know a lot about it, seek some help to understand the condition a little better and understand that each child is going to require different care because it's a spectrum. So if you want to look at it, or it's a range, because they're probably saying you're saying spectrum all the time. What that mean? It's a range of severity, a range of symptoms, range of presentations.
Okay, Doc, let me just interrupt you here because we're getting very short on time. It's 9 minutes before the hour of seven. We have to break at 7:04 program, a recorded program. But I have the lady who called earlier who you wanted to ask a question or two. She's back with us. Good. So if you want to ask a question or two, you can so do.
Yes.
Good evening, ma'am.
Okay.
Yes, please. Good evening.
Good evening.
Yes,
hi, thank you so much for calling back. So
sure.
What I want to start saying, is that a son or daughter that you have?
Daughter.
Daughter. And you were saying your daughter was diagnosed with autism, but also Tourette's syndrome, right?
Yes, please.
Yes, okay. So if you could, is your daughter, can she speak? As in, is she verbal? Good. Okay. Could you tell the listeners maybe some of the most challenging things that you find in terms of, you know, every day in Barbados with a child with autism?
Certain days can be good. Other days can be challenging, especially the behavior.
Mm-hmm.
The behavior part is very challenging. But, it was like bathroom and sitting down because she's not focused. So she gets focused very easily.
Mm-hmm.
She loves children and stuff, but she do not do the eye to eye when you're speaking to her.
Okay.
Doesn't do the contact.
Mm-hmm.
She idles like up and down, up and down. She doesn't keep quiet.
Mm-hmm. Do you
with her hands?
Okay. And the question.
It's only now that she's older that the behavior.
How old is she?
16.
15. Okay.
16.
16.
1-6.
1-6. Okay. So you would say that the behavior got better as she got older?
No, it's a bit better because it was like aggressive,
mm-hmm.
and like attacking.
Mm-hmm.
But it's easing up bit by bit.
And does she attend a special school?
The problem is transportation.
Okay.
Got her into a school but can't get the transportation to get her there.
Okay.
So that's the honest thing. You need the socialization.
Yeah, that's a challenge. Mm-hmm.
In Thoracan.
Yeah, that's a definite challenge. Did you find that the ministry was able to point you in the direction of any resources?
No.
Okay. And does she, were her doctors ever able to assist where that was concerned?
No.
Okay.
He helped in different areas, but Dr. Medford is very good doctor. AC Green Development Center, that's all they could tell you.
She is a very, very good doctor. Does your daughter do any therapies like occupational therapy, speech therapy, anything like that? Or did she have to do those before?
She did that years ago when she was younger.
She was younger.
Occupational therapy, speech She did speech therapy outside because at the time when she was diagnosed, when she was 3, the diagnosis was mild autistic. The time it would be a long list, so I had to go outside. And she went through the psychologist and psychiatrist and everything. So it was a lot of up and down, up and down.
A lot of appointments. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you so very much. Have a good evening.
Thank you, ma'am. Thanks for coming back.
No problem.
I really appreciate it.
Yeah, she made sure she got a top up to come back and speak to you for a couple of days. So that's very good of her. We're short on time, so I'll read these ones very quickly. This one says, good evening, Gretchen and the doctors. Did not join early today, but realized you were speaking about autism. I worked for a long time with some of these children and found that each child operates differently. Some love particular colors, foods, children's shows, television shows, and so many other things, but I enjoyed working with each and every one of them. I'm retired now and was thinking about joining an organization who deals with these children. That's one contribution. I think there's another one here very quickly. He was asking a question. I want to see if I can get you in on it before we say goodbye. This one says, good evening all. Just a short question. Is autism in any way, does it have any connection with Down syndrome?
No known connection, to be honest. I mean, you may find, because in order to actually make the diagnosis, they can't have any of the other developmental diseases, not diseases, but disorders, right? And so, for anybody who's listening and the retired person who was asking about, because they were thinking about volunteering, I really hope that you're able to get through on this, but the Autism Association of Barbados, so on Instagram, because they did a post up to today, it is Autism Association Barbados 2022. So Autism Association Barbados 2022 on Instagram. So there it is. They had 2 pages. And then there's an international one, which is Autism Speaks, which has a lot of resources, and their posts really help in terms of education and awareness about autism. So I'm really, really glad that there was so much interest. So imagine, with Gregson, if I had a guest, they wouldn't have even been able to speak. Because I figured this would be a topic that would have been very interesting to our listeners, because there's not a lot known about it. And when people think about autism, they only think about the nonverbal child who they see making what they would consider strange or abnormal movements or actions. And they think about behavioral issues. But we need to recognize that is a spectrum. And as the person saying on the WhatsApp rightly said, each child is different. Each child has different needs, different issues. And there's some who really don't need much from you. And may need more support when they are younger. But as they get older, go through school, they may not need as much, right? They may not need as much support from others. And they may not need as many therapies and that sort of thing. But it's important to get the, if you have any suspicions, to get the child screened early. Because an early diagnosis and early intervention makes a difference in terms of the quality of life that the individual can have in living on the autism spectrum.
Right. I hope they can remember that and do the right thing where it is very necessary to do so. Dr. Ford St. Hill, I want to thank you kindly. I really, really am thanking you kindly for coming by and spending some time with us. Sorry you had to do it solo, but see, it worked out. We got through.
No, but it did. It did. This was how it was supposed to happen, and I enjoyed it.
All right, wonderful. All right, until we meet again, you don't know who's next week, so yes. I will not ask you that this time, but I want to thank you kindly.
No.
That's Dr. Keira Ford St. Hill.
But I would say, we are planning to speak about the cost of healthcare.
That would be a long program.
It will be. So the listeners can look out for that one next week.
Cost of healthcare. Anyhow, Dr. Ford, thank you. Thank you so kindly. And have yourself a wonderful, wonderful evening. Until next weekend, we will hear from either you or the other two good doctors for more information.
Or a combination.
Or a combination. Thank you so much and have a wonderful evening. Take care. That's Dr. Kaya Fortin Hill of the Better Health Radio Show. And we want to thank her and listen out next week, same time, for another edition of this program.